Yeah, you were expecting some obnoxious bullshit to start us off, which is fair because that's kind of how this year has gone in terms of PH5 beginnings. I think the very first episode of the year, I started with a burp. But what better way to kick off the year? And I think episodes prior, I'm just making a lot of really annoying, obnoxious noises. So, you know, I've decided to give you a breather and be a little bit normal this time around. You're welcome. And apologies for being a fucking weirdo in all previous episodes. How are we doing? It is a nice, warm afternoon here. Here in the six, T-Dot is Toronto, for those of you who don't know. Although it's funny because T-Dot is Toronto, right? Yes, this is confirmed, but the artist known as Kendrick Lamar is known as K-Dot, and there's a particular beef brewing right now between Toronto's Golden Boy and K-Dot. So isn't it kind of weird that, you know, T-Dot versus K-Dot? It's like, what's next? You know, P-Dot? Should I go by P-Dot? I could. I won't, but I could. How was everyone's April? April showers bring May flowers. They do say that. Haven't seen many flowers necessarily, but I always thought that was more of a metaphor than anything. My April was good, you know? What happened? I don't know, I was working and stuff. I was really into this season's run of RuPaul's Drag Race. Shout out Nymphia Wynn for winning. That was an exciting part of my April, that's for sure. Vote yellow, as they say. And yeah, just I'm feeling like I'm sitting here and I've got like a little bit of like a sweaty vibe right now. I was just at the gym. And I'm not showering because like I'm going for a haircut after this. And I'm gonna want to shower after that again because you know how you get all the like little hair fibers all over your skin? So I'm just like sitting here kind of like stewing in my own filth right now. And you know, but it's a good thing because I mean, summer is on the way and summer is all about stewing in your own filth. You know, winter's about like eating stew and summer is about stewing. It's the big takeaway for this episode and thank you for listening. Have a great day. Just kidding, we're gonna do the whole thing today. You know, average standard episode today. April, you know, was it March caliber? Not quite, but you know, March was kind of like a lot of excellent albums that it was kind of hard to pick. April was like a lot of good albums, you know, like nothing, well, actually one in particular that kind of, you know, changed my life, not really, but you know. And a lot of just like pretty good albums, so you know, it's a good mix because it gives you time to really digest everything and take it all in and spread the love equally. Some great records we're going to talk about this time from some old friends, old favorites, and actually, yeah, it is quite a bit of old friends, new favorites geared. You know, let me just get this right out of the way right now. I'm sure there are a few of you who are itching for me to do some, you know, Taylor Swift bullshit talk, whatever. I'm not gonna do it. I haven't listened to the album. I don't want to. I'm not going to. You know, there's just been enough written about and said about her and this record by many other people with more important and better opinions than mine. So you know what, you can go and listen to them and if you want a solid opinion or whatever criticism of this record, because you're not going to get it from me. Not this time. Sorry about that. I also just like you know, I don't want to give her any more attention or streams or anything than she already has, because, like, you know, she's like the only artist on the planet that can make a mid album and still, that's what everyone talks about anyway. Like, it's crazy. But see, I'm falling into my own trap, and here I am talking about it. So I'm just cutting it off right now. That's it. We're done. We're not talking about Taylor Swift. So let's get into it then, before I start doing it again. Okay. PH5. This is for April 2024. This is your host and friend and potential enemy, Phil May. Thanks for tuning in as always. Okay, number five, we have Coagulated Bliss by Full of Hell. Full of Hell. Now, this is an interesting band, because it's one of those groups that, by all rights, should be one of my favorites. Like, the kind of music that they play, this really extreme, like, noise-based, grindy, black metalcore is really right up my alley, but I've never really been able to get into them because, I can't believe I'm even saying this, but they've just been like almost like too noisy, like kind of too much. Again, baffling because, you know, nothing is ever enough for me. But with these guys, it actually is. I've always wanted to get into them. I dig their aesthetic and their just completely chaotic vibe, but, you know, it's one of those things where I just appreciate it more than I actually am feeling inclined to listen to it, because it's a lot. First thing, new album. You look at the album cover, and it's their first non-black and white album cover ever, as far as I know. Could be wrong, but yeah, there are like blues and oranges and pinks and stuff like this, and not to say that, you know, they're outright putting out a freaking surf rock album or anything like this, but the album cover is amazing, by the way. Really, really cool stuff. But it should give you a hint that this is not your mama's Full of Hell, you know? This is not the same band, or I mean it is, but they've taken a different approach here. You know, they've been kind of inspired by, you know, what they say, pop music, but essentially what they're looking at is, can we tone back some of the just caustic abrasion to a degree, of course. Again, this is still Full of Hell. It's still absolutely nasty chaos, but there's a bit more structure to these songs. There's like actual discernible riffs. You know, some of the songs actually have somewhat of a structure to them. And it just generally makes for a much easier listen than anything they've put out in the past. Which is great, you know, because I finally kind of have an in here. And I feel like if I can really get into this album, which I am, maybe this will open the door for me to really understand and embrace their earlier stuff. And I think a lot of this newfound kind of, you know, openness to making something resembling an actual song has a lot to do with their collaboration with the shoegaze band Nothing last year, for that 9/11 themed album. What was it? Where No Birds Sing or something like this? Pretty good album. I didn't love it, but, you know, I appreciated what happened when these two bands' styles kind of converged that way, and, you know, it weirdly made sense. And, you know, Nothing really rubbed off on them. Nothing rubbed off on them. So did anything rub off on them? It's a good joke. And yeah, anyway, so I gotta say, I'm really digging this new found sense of, you know, songcraft that these guys now have. And I'm really liking this new album, and I'm actually excited because I'm going to see them tonight. on which is, I think, one of the funniest, like telling people about the show I'm going tonight. Oh yeah, I'm going to see Dying Fetus, Full of Hell, 200 Stab Wounds, and Cruelty. Oh, what do you think that show is going to sound like? Take a wild fucking guess. But it wasn't until I heard this album that I finally decided to cave and get tickets. And now I'm really looking forward to it. So I'll let you know how that show goes next time around, if I remember. No promises. I probably won't. But yeah, on the whole, great new record. And finally, they've released something listenable. You know, full of good songs would be an idea for their band name, I guess. If you wanted to change your band name on a bi-record basis, it's an idea for them. So, coming in at number 5, we have Coagulated Bliss by Full of Hell. Number 4, we have Adult Jazz with So Sorry, So Slow. So, this is a kind of a weirdo band. They released their first record, Just Is. That's the name of the record. I'm not going on to describe the record via gisting it. Back actually a decade ago in 2014. And that was one of the records that year that really grew on me and ended up being one of my favorite of that year. It just had this really fascinating mix of like angular yet kind of goofy off-kilter songwriting, that, you know, combined elements of like kind of post-punk but with a decent amount of melody and really kind of, I don't know, it's really hard to describe that record, and I still haven't really heard anything like it since, but it's a fascinating record. Definitely a very British record. I don't really know how else to describe it other than that. That, yeah, really kind of captured me and took a hold on me back in 2014, and then they kind of disappeared. They released an EP called, I believe, his Earrings Off a few years later. Wasn't that great, and I kind of written this band off as just one of those acts that, you know, came by, released one amazing album, and then that's kind of all they have in their system, you know? Not that there's anything wrong with that. You know, the vast majority of people ever never release a good album. So, hell, you guys made one? That's, again, you're already better than, you know, 99.999% of population ever. Good job. So when they had announced that they're actually releasing a full-length follow-up, here we are a decade later, it's pretty wild. Like, okay. And I was very apprehensive. Like, there's no way they'd be able to recapture that magic. Again, a full decade later. Like, you know, I think about who I was a decade ago, and a very different person, and presumably that's kind of how other people work too. I don't know. I mean, I'm me. I don't. I only know how I am, I guess. If that makes sense. So this album was a very pleasant surprise. I mean, it's definitely not, never quite gets to the heights of Just Is, which were very high and very frequent. Like, the whole album is amazing. But it still has a lot of that adult jazz charm from, you know, that first record. These kind of strange off-kilter melodies that somehow end up sticking in your head, despite the fact that they're very just generally weird. Bizarre instrumentation that is somehow, like, light and heavy and minimal and maximal all at the same time. Again, it's a very hard band to describe. I'd say it's weirder than their first album, which kind of makes up for the kind of you know, not as good songwriting that was there the first time around. But still a very captivating and intriguing listen that, from start to finish, takes you on a strange journey. They're still a band kind of unlike any other out there right now. And yeah, it's fun, it's weird. These guys obviously have a sense of humor about things, but they're not, like, you know, dumb or, like, obnoxiously goofy. They're just a bunch of weirdos. Again, very strictly British weirdos, making very strictly weird British music, and it just kind of works. And for a band to come back after basically a decade and release something that is solid, it's a blessing. It's a godsend. Like, literally, that never happens. So, shout out to them. Soon enough, they'll be making Senior Jazz, if they keep up the time between records like this. That poor joke will end my discussion on this band. So, coming in at number 4, we have Adult Jazz, So Sorry, So Slow. Okay, number 3, we have Twin Paradise by Golden Drag. I love when, sometimes when it comes to finishing up the episodes and I'm going to, write it up and posting it, and I'm like, what am I going to call this episode? And sometimes it's really, obvious, and sometimes I really have to, really think, was there some sort of underlying theme here? Was there some sort of connectivity between what I talked about? And a lot of times the answer is no, and I just make up some random bullshit. Spoiler. But, I love it when a theme comes together so easily with this one. Anyway, more on that later. But Golden Drag by... That's the artist name. So, Twin Paradise by Golden Drake. This is, he can correct me if I'm wrong, the kind of debut full length, I guess you would say, from Golden Drake. And Golden Drake is the, I don't want to say new, because he's been making music under this moniker for a while, but the, main focus project right now of Shahzad Jawani. Friend of mine here in Toronto. He used to play in a bunch of bands here in the local Toronto scene, starting with Arietta. That's right, Shahzad. I'm calling out the Arietta connection. My guy Kumar actually has the Arietta CD at his place right now. I'd completely forgotten about them until I saw it as a part of his mural. But more importantly, as a part of Grays, who were kind of a, we'll call them a post-hardcore, they like to call themselves a, loud rock or heavy rock band, released a bunch of records kind of in the late 2000s, 2010s, ending with what I still think is maybe my favorite Toronto record. Age Hasn't Spoiled You. I really do think that is personally my favorite kind of piece of music that has come out from the Toronto scene just in general. A culmination of a decade plus of songwriting and hard work, and I've known Shahzad for a long time, and I know that this guy, music is everything to him. And it has been for a long time. He's been pretty formative for me in terms of the things that I enjoy and I listen to, even though he's a massive asshole. Kidding. And when Grays kind of dissolved after Age Hasn't Spoiled You, it was a bit of a bummer for me, because I was a big fan of theirs right from the get-go. I really thought that record, that last record they went out on, was just sensational. So, I knew he was working on new music, but I had no idea the depth or the breadth of the new Golden Drag record that just came out last week. And what we have here is 15 songs, about an hour long, and it really feels like his opus at this point in time. You know, from my understanding, Graze was kind of a lot more of a collaborative songwriting effort, but this is fully him, and I hear almost all of, you know, the music that he loves and has, you know, kind of talked about and you know, really put on growing up in this project. I hear shades of you know, alt rock, Brit pop. There are songs that kind of venture into almost trip hop territory, you know, Euro big beat. And you know, if you want to go and follow him on Instagram, he's written, you know, kind of like a thesis on this record, and it's really interesting. But you know, I don't want to go too much into that because you don't really need to kind of know all this kind of thought and whatever behind the album, because the record itself is just purely enjoyable on a surface level. You know, he's mentioned that he kind of built this almost as a mixtape, like something you'd want to throw on during a road trip or a long journey. And I get that, because the songs are varied. There's a lot of different styles that he kind of touches upon here, but it all feels cohesive from start to finish. And just the songwriting is top notch. The guy still knows how to write a hook. He still knows how to get wild and freaky with a, you know, at this point, a lot more electronic kind of freakouts rather than guitar based, which is an interesting new fold into his oeuvre. It's just a solid, solid record, and I really do think that he is one of the most underrated artists here in this city. Like, I don't know, he should be a star. He should be out there touring the world. He's got the chops, he's got the playing ability, which you can hear across this entire record. I'm assuming he, you know, played everything on here. I'm pretty sure he produced the whole thing itself. Sounds absolutely fantastic, with a lot of really cool production tricks kind of thrown into every song. But again, at the end of the day, it's about the songs, and he just delivers there. So, you know, I'm not allowed to kind of criticize the record because, you know, I know him and he'll get mad at me, but I don't really have anything bad to say about it. I mean, it's a great record. I listen to it all the time. And yeah, I wish this had a way of falling into the right hands or right ears, I guess you could say, because, you know, this is the purest, most distilled form of who this guy is and this Golden Drag project that, I don't know, this record should be a hit, and a lot of people should be hearing it. I hope that this podcast does something to get it into the ears of some people that otherwise wouldn't have heard it, because he, honest to God, really deserves it. So, coming in at number 3, we have Twin Paradise by Golden Drag. Alright, mentions time, I suppose?
These are the mentions.
Mentions.
Yeah, so, okay. Honorable mention for April 2024. We're gonna go with Claire Rousey Sentiment. So, Claire Rousey... is it Rousey? Rousey? I don't know. Rousey, I feel weird when I say... like, I feel like I'm saying it wrong. So, sorry, Claire. But butchering names is all part of the PH5 experience. This newest record is by self-described emo ambient artist Claire Rousey, and she has put out a lot of music. And kind of up until recently, the main kind of stylistic form of her music has been this really kind of interesting, intriguing form of ambient music that pulls in a lot of what's the word I'm looking for here? Like sound collage and I can't believe I forget the word. You know when it's like, you know, like sounds, like captured sound, like anyway, I mean, I'm sure you hope know what I mean. You know when you like bring a microphone out to like the world and like you record it? A lot of that. There's a very specific word for it, and I'm not remembering it right now. My bad. And I featured one of her records on a previous season. A Softer Focus, fantastic record. I think that was from 2021 or 2. I don't know. Doesn't matter. But the point is, this new record is seeing her taking a bit of a different approach. And she's done a lot of collaborative work with fellow artist Maurice, where they've taken a more song-based approach versus the kind of emo and like ambient music that Claire typically makes. And so Claire is utilizing a little bit more of this style, this form on this record. A lot of the songs feature guitar and vocals. And this is really where the kind of the emo of the emo ambient comes in. Although I think slowcore is a little bit more accurate of a reference. I mean, the lyrics are definitely very, very emo. Poor girl seems pretty sad. But the best kind of music reference I would give would be kind of slowcore, kind of mixed with ambient and kind of these found sound collage type, whatever. Really wish I remember that fucking word right now. So in my opinion, again, just one dumbass with a podcast opinion, I prefer the earlier style, the ambient, because she really, the way that she was able to really like capture emotions without necessarily using words or you know, using obvious touch points for emotions with her previous music was really fascinating and intriguing to me. And you know, because there are a lot of emotions and a lot of, you know, thoughts and feelings that you can't really use words to describe. And that's what her music was able to do. It was able to kind of embody those feelings and those emotions without using any words at all. So by folding in, you know, more typical song structures and lyrics and guitar and heavily auto-tuned vocals, you know, it's a new approach. I prefer the old style, but I do think she's onto something very interesting here by creating what I described my friend as kind of like emo ambient slowcore. Like, it's definitely something that's not really being done elsewhere today. It's not landing for me quite as much as her previous works, but I will say that, you know, her kind of more ambient leaning styles of music was really more in her alley. She had a lot more experience making that. And I have nothing but full confidence that as Claire leans a little bit more into this new quote unquote traditional style of music making, it'll just get better and better. So I can't wait to see what she does next. But, you know, for now, not quite there yet. That said, she's still one of the most intriguing artists around today. And she's going to be around for a long time because that is a very special talent. So, honorable mention for April 2024, we have Claire Rousey, Sentiment. Okay, the mention is going to be Dua Lipa, Radical Optimism. Yeah, okay, what? What? Really? So, are you saying... No, I know it's me saying it, but, like... did anyone even know this, like, came out? Like, okay. I'm thinking about... Think about when the pandemic first hit. For that first year or two, this woman was absolutely inescapable. Future nostalgia, was, you know, a pretty great pop record for sure. But I think she really benefited from the crazy circumstance by which the album came out. By releasing this kind of fun disco-inflected record right when everyone was trapped at home. The kind of friction between, you know, the isolation and this kind of party music really worked wonders for her. I think the record would have been a huge success regardless, but I think the context in which it was released have really kind of benefited her a lot, because this really became the soundtrack to, you know, the isolation parties, you know, dancing at home by yourself in your living room, blah, blah, blah. And like when people finally were able to go out again and finally able to just get out and dance, these songs, like, it was like people were finally able to get out and dance in public to these songs that they've been dancing to privately for so long. And it added like a whole new dimension to the record that I think may not have otherwise been there, and kind of elevated her to a level of pop stardom that I don't want to say she wasn't ready for, but again, I just don't think she really would have achieved otherwise. And a large part of why I think that now is because look at this new record. Every single she's released so far has just absolutely bombed. Like, can you name one of the songs that was pre-released from this record? I mean, I know of the Houdini song, just because, you know, Houdini is a pretty memorable name. And I thought it was kind of like interesting that, you know, primarily made with Kevin Parker from Tame Impala, which you really hear in the song. But the song itself is really not that interesting or catchy or good. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't listened to the album yet. I've heard the off song every now and then. And what I've heard, again, is kind of the same territory of not really that interesting, catchy, or good. But, you know, I don't really want to talk about the album itself. I just want to talk about this interesting phenomenon of, like, Dua Lipa. Again, she was the girl of the moment, you know, not even 2 years ago. But here we are with her follow-up, and it's crickets. So, what is it that makes people, you know, care about someone? I know that's a pretty kind of broad philosophical question, but like, why is it that everyone cared then and no one cares now? Is it the music? Is it the songs? You know, surely the songs aren't quite as good as they were previously, but they still seem serviceable enough, and Lord knows there are other artists there who I'm not going to talk about right now who have released just as mid, if not worse, music than her, and no one can fucking shut up about it. So, you know, what happened to Dua Lipa? Why does no one care anymore? I don't have the answer to this question. I don't, but It is intriguing, and, you know, I did, you know, not to, like, toot my own whistle, as they say, but I kind of, like, called this about a year ago. I was like, Dua Lipa's gonna flop, for sure. Because, to me, that fame that she got with Future Nostalgia was almost more context-based than it was actually about her. And something interesting about, you know, pop artists that are really, you know, kind of popular and whatnot these days is that the fans really feel connected with them and feel like they're almost a part of their lives. You know, look at Taylor, look at, you know, Olivia Rodrigo, who makes, you know, really kind of fun but personal music. like, any big star today has this kind of deep, intimate connection with their fans, where the fans feel like every new song is kind of a deeper look into that person, and the narrative that surrounds them. But Dua Lipa has no narrative. No one really knows who this person is. You know, all you really know about Dua Lipa is that she seems to be on vacation 365 days a year, you know, and starring in bad movies all the time. Does anyone really know anything about her at all? Like, what's her personality like? Who's she dating? What's she like? And, like, it's dumb that this should dictate fame and should dictate popularity or whatever, but that's kind of where we're at in terms of pop music right now. And Dua Lipa's given us nothing. Again, I want to go back and reference Drag Race. I'm not going to say I'm an expert at the show, by the way. Like, this is literally the first full season that I've watched. But a thing that I noticed with this watch is that, like, you can't win or you can't get far unless you have your, like, you know, trauma bonding moment, you know, where you cry and you talk about your life and the hardships that you've been through, blah, blah, blah. It's not until you've done that that you kind of get the empathy from the audience and you actually feel like you're connected with them. We have none of that with Dua Lipa, you know, and it's like, this could have been her opportunity to really let us in to who she is as a person. Instead, she releases this record literally called Radical Optimism, which, again, I haven't listened to it, but based on that title, it's just a bunch of, like, happy-go-lucky songs about, I don't know, being a famous person who goes to a different beach every day. So my advice to Dua, obviously I'm the one to take advice from as I sit in my apartment in Moss Park. You know, drop your guard a little bit, you know, have something traumatic happen to you. I don't know what else to say. Like, you wanna actually be a star, you need to be flawed, and Dua Lipa has no flaws as far as we can see, and that's boring. So, coming in at the mention for April 2024, Dua Lipa, Radical Optimism. And lastly, the dishonorable mention. We have Hyperdrama by Justice. And, like, I don't know, I feel almost kind of bad. How many times do I stir it up? I feel almost kind of bad kind of doing this to these guys, because it's not really like they've released any good music in a very long time anyway. So, I don't know, like, was this album a letdown? Not really, because I wasn't expecting it to be good, but I guess more so what I want to talk about is just, like, in the weeks leading up to this album, I don't really know who these people were, but I kept on seeing posts about what a, like, return to form this record was, and how it's the best since their first one that they put out, which holds up, actually, is still amazing, and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I got all hyped for it. I was excited. I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, a throwback to, you know, the original Justice days, the Cross days. Like, let's fucking go. This is gonna be sick. Like, I had some wild, great memories listening to that album, you know, just finishing up high school and, you know, finally getting into electronic music for the first time. And then the record came out and it's just kind of like, more kind of boring, not exciting Justice music, the same that they've been making for basically since Cross came out. Hilariously enough, record also features Kevin Parker from Tame Impala. He just is like, he's kind of becoming like the new Jack Antonoff, you know, like, just the king of making just okay music. Yeah, so again, like, I was disappointed, but not necessarily because I was expecting more, but I people were giving me the impression that this was going to be a return to form, and it just isn't. It's just another kind of boring Justice record. So maybe the lesson here is, Don't listen to anyone about anything until you hear it for yourself. Because chances are, if you get your hopes up for something, it's gonna end up letting you down. Here you go. How's that for radical optimism? So, coming in at the dishonorable mention, we have Hyperdrama by Justice.
These are the mentions.
The mentions.
Anyway, those were the mentions. So, moving on. Number two for April 2024, we have Inter Arma New Heaven. Inter Arma is, or was, and is, one of the more interesting bands in heavy slash metal music these days, because they're pretty hard to define. A lot of bands, you know, mix genres and play around the genre, blah blah blah. But I honestly couldn't really tell you at any point what kind of metal it is that these guys play. Is it sludge? Is it black metal? Death metal? It's kind of all of those things and none of those things at the same time. And this kind of genre agnostic form of heavy music came to a head with their latest record, Sulfur English, which came out in 2019, and absolute beast of a record that kind of cemented them as one of the most forward-thinking and interesting heavy music bands today. Anyway, they've been gone for 4 or 5 years now, and they are finally back with this really anticipated new record, which sees them once again kind of playing in every subgenre of metal heavy music while at the same time kind of playing in none of them at all. I get it's hard to explain. It's really something you need to hear to understand what I mean. Like, there are elements of all of these different types of heavy music in there for sure, but you couldn't really say it's one or the other. And this record actually sees them looping in a lot more disparate sounds than normal into the mix of what they're doing. Like, the last song literally basically sounds like a Nick Cave song, just maybe a little bit heavier than what he's been doing recently. There's a song in here that almost reminds me of, like, Devin Townsend, if anything, which is really not something I thought I'd be saying anytime recently. But it still sounds great. I don't think it quite hits the highs of Sulfur English, which was just a brutally devastating, amazing magnum opus of a record. It's a lot shorter than that one. A lot more condensed. There's only 8 songs on here, but it's still really effective. And while they kind of bring it a lot more, again, of these kind of more melodic touches with cleaner singing and, you know, a full song that actually sounds like a song and not just like a brutal onslaught of sound, it's the production touches for me that make this the most unique and kind of interesting record in their catalog right now. Because it still has that grit and that edge and that heaviness that is associated with them and with, you know, heavy music in general. But there are these really kind of subtle things happening in the background that you typically don't really hear with these kinds of music. Like, kind of electronic touches that, you know, might sound corny in the hands of, you know, lamer bands, but with them really push the genre forward and push the band forward as what they're doing. And I guess when you've been, you know, because these guys have been around, you know, longer than I realized anyway, like at least 2010 or so, when you get to like the 14, 15 year mark in your career, you know, if you're not a kind of meat and potatoes band that has a defined sound that, you know, your fans come to love. When your whole thing is kind of being genre agnostic, it's hard to find new and interesting ways to expand your sound and keep it interesting when your whole shtick is kind of expansion of sound, if that makes any sense. But the way that they've done it here is really cool. It's unique. I know I'm not doing a great job of actually describing the music itself, but think like... Boy, I did a little bit. Okay, I gotta go easier on myself here. I did an okay job. But honestly, the best way I would describe it is, yeah, just throwing kind of all the heavy metal genres you can kind of think of into one kind of tasty soup, you know, a stew, if you will. And yeah, it's a great record. I love the album art. You know, that stands for something, right? And I don't think it quite kind of hits the highs of their previous records, but they're still doing something really interesting and really unique to the genre that no one else is really doing today, and they still do remain one of the most vital and interesting bands making heavy / metal / whatever you want to call it music these days. So, coming in at number 2, we have New Heaven by Inter Arma. And coming in at number 1 for the month, it is kind of cheating because the album did technically come out March 31st, but I don't care about that. I'm picking it anyway. Number 1 album is Diamond Jubilee by Cindy Lee. So, if you're anyone who is even remotely online and or interested, again, even remotely in, you know, independent music in any way, you've heard of this record, which is weird because 2 months ago, the vast, vast majority of people have never heard of Cindy Lee before. Whereas now, it's kind of all anyone has been able to talk about all month. And that's because... weirdly enough, never thought I'd be saying this in this day and age, but it's because of motherfucking Pitchfork, of all people, giving the album a 9.2, which was, you know, famously the highest score given to a record on the website since the perfect 10 for Fiona Apple's Fetch the Bolt Cutters. But it's important bringing up because, again, no one was listening to Cindy Lee before that. Caveat, okay? I was, alright? I've been aware of Cindy Lee for, you know, over a decade now. Close to 15 years, because that's how long Cindy Lee's been active. And I was absolutely obsessed with this record well before Pitchfork dropped the review, okay? So not to sound like a complete gatekeepy douchebag, but you know, I was a little bit annoyed when that happened because, like, you know, I was so excited to, like, oh, like, you know, I'm gonna drop the bomb of this unknown record being number 1 on this show that so many people listen to, and it would have been interesting, but then fucking everyone with a pair of fucking glasses and a beard was talking about this album all month, and I just wanted to feel special, you know? But mom says I'm special, so it's okay. But yeah, it just goes to show still the power that Pitchfork still has. Like, even though they've gone way down the drain since the Condé Nast acquisition a few years ago, and they're very, very obvious shift towards poptimism and just the kind of slow trickle away of actual music journalism on their website and their shift away from reviews featuring or whatever it is. The fact that this artist went from virtually unknown to playing sold-out shows every single night of the tour and having everyone online talk about them. It's just a testament to the staying power. You know, it's a very, like, 2000s kind of thing, you know? Like, the way that Pitchfork, the power that they had to make or break careers, it's interesting how it's kind of still in effect. I don't know if they necessarily would have the power to break them the way that they used to, because they really fucked a lot of indie artists over with some not so charitable reviews, but clearly they still have that power of at least, you know, getting people to listen to things they would not have otherwise listened to. Now, all this being said, I want to give all credit to Cindy Lee because the score was deserved, and the album is just absolutely incredible stuff. So a little bit about Cindy Lee. Cindy Lee is the project of Patrick Flagle, Pat Flagle's kind of drag alter ego, Cindy Lee, and the music that, you know, kind of Cindy Lee would make, you know, if she was a real person. I guess she's a real person. Pat Flagle was a member of kind of cult band Women from Calgary here in Canada that released two records back in the late 2000s. The second of which, Public Strain, is still probably a top 10 record of all time for me. Like, just some of the best shit ever put to tape, as far as I'm concerned. And they infamously kind of dissolved after a huge onstage brawl during one of their shows. Half the band went on to form Viet Cong, which then became Preoccupations, because people weren't a huge fan of the fact that they had named themselves after a terrorist group. And the other half the band becoming Cindy Lee, Pat Flagle, and unfortunately the fourth member passing away in kind of a tragic freak death that was really shocking and honestly disturbing at the time it happened. But the whole thing just kind of added to the legend and legacy of Women as one of Canada's all-time great indie rock stories. So the music that Women made was, I remember it's produced by this guy named Chad Van Galen, I think it was, and the whole style of music, I remember hearing it referred to at some point as shitgaze, like a kind of nasty-ass version of shoegaze, which is actually pretty accurate. The recording techniques are intentionally just extremely kind of lo-fi to the point of being abrasive, which really fit the kind of music that they were making, which was kind of a more abrasive, noisy indie rock that took a lot of cues and inspirations from, say, like 60s pop and almost like doo-wop at times. And Cindy Lee, the music that Pat was making under the Cindy Lee moniker for a long time was kind of an extension of this, but really noisy and like super, super abrasive. Like almost intentionally trying to keep people away, you know? Like, I feel like, and again, I'm just making assumptions here, which I probably shouldn't make, but whatever happened in Women was just not a good experience for Pat. And, you know, they wanted to kind of drive fame away as much as possible by making these intentionally impenetrable records. You know, I still like them. You know, I thought there was value to the music that, you know, Pat was making under the Cindy Lee name. But, you know, it didn't come anywhere close to just the alchemic genius of Women and those two very, very special records. So Diamond Jubilee is, I guess, more or less like a culmination of a few years of recording and it almost completely eschews all this abrasion in favor of melody and warmth and almost optimism at times. It's at heart a pop record. Now Pat and his guitar are they're intertwined, and these are all songs that really speak almost to the, you know, power of the guitar. You know, they're all kind of based around riffs or you know, arpeggios or whatever it may be, but it's very clear that everything on this record starts with the guitar, and then maybe the voice, maybe not. A lot of the songs don't even bother with vocals, and then anything else is just kind of, you know, sauce, if you will. And I call this record a culmination of songs because that's really what it sounds like, and that sounds like not a good thing, but I need to explain a little bit here. So the record itself is like 32 songs long or something like this. It's 2 hours long, and we've seen a lot of artists lately, you know, make these really long albums, you know, like Beyonce, Cowboy Carter, that thing was what, like 27 songs or something like that. You know, new Taylor Swift, again, I said I wouldn't bring her up, but it just keeps happening. You can't help it, you know, she's just so fucking omnipresent, like, I don't have a choice. But, you know, that latest record was something like, I don't know, 20, 25 songs or something like this. And with these longer records, usually it's either a ploy for streaming, just in game streaming numbers, or it's kind of like a journey, if you will, you know, where there's interludes and the whole thing is meant to act as kind of like a grand narrative. And that's not the case with this record. It's literally just a collection of songs. The reason why it works is because it's like 32 great songs. You know how fucking hard that, you know how hard it is to write one good song? This song, this album, sorry, is 32 great to amazing songs. And that's why this record is so special. Like, you can throw all the, like, narrative around it out the window. You can throw the whole, like, pitchfork shit, all the, you know, this harkens back to a golden era of indie, blah, blah. You can throw all of that out the window because at the end of the day, what matters is, are the songs good? And the answer is yes. But not only are the songs good, but there's fucking 32 of them. And it's so easy to listen to. I've listened to all 2 hours of this record so many times now, and that's a commitment. I mean, you really need to, like, to find time and space to carve out 2 hours to listen to this thing from start to finish. That's hard to do these days. Like, you know, life's busy. Shit's always happening. We're always, you know, bustling around, doing whatever. But these 32 songs are so good that I would make time. You know, I would like schedule this shit into my days because I'm that eager to listen to it because it's so good. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you throw everything away, music is, it's a lot of things, but it's about songs. And these are good songs. These are great songs. A lot of these are amazing songs. I mean, I definitely have my highlights on the record. My personal kind of favorite section is, I'd say, like, the middle, like, the, if the album were to be, like, kind of put into quarters, like, the third quarter of the record, I find the best. But, like, the whole thing is just so good, start to finish. I mean, it's sensation. It's just there. It's so hard to do that. Like, I've heard the record described as like a greatest hits collection of, you know, a bygone artist that doesn't exist. And, you know, with the production style, it still sounds, you know, very lo-fi, old-timey, and the kind of music itself is, you know, this kind of mix between, it kind of really goes all over the place, but like indie, almost like funk, like 50s girl group, post-punk, like it's kind of all there, but again, like it's 32 good songs. What more do you want? And yeah, it really does sound like a greatest hits collection. It sounds like, you know, cherry picked the best songs from this one artist's career, all on one record. But the thing is, it's not a greatest hits album. It's just the new Cindy Lee record. And maybe there won't be any more after this. I kind of get a feeling that this might be the end because, you know, once again, Cindy Lee's in the spotlight. Once again, Pat Flagel is, you know, an indie star, you know, just like they were 15 years ago. And it didn't seem to go so well for them the first time around. But, like, sorry, Pat, but like, you're a talent. Like, you're special, and you know, special gets rewarded, special gets noticed, and that's really what you are, and that's what this record is. It's special. So, you know, I know you're busy, we're all busy, but I don't know. Carve 2 hours out of your life next weekend. Put this record on. You know, it's available on YouTube, or you can download it from a Geosite's website for a suggested donation. Find it and just put it on. Allow yourself the time to enjoy this, you know, because it's worth it. It's really worth it because, again, this is just special. You don't get 32 straight great songs in a row anymore. You never got them ever, really. So soak it in, and trust me, you won't regret it. Number one for April 2024, Diamond Jubilee by Cindy Lee. Yeah, that's gonna do it. Thanks for listening. I have to go and get my hair cut for my big date night with Dying Fetus tonight. So we'll let you know how that goes next time around. Until then, have fun. Enjoy life. Don't take things too seriously. And yeah, we'll talk to you later. This is Phil May, PH5, out once again.